Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Thank you, Eddie. Thank you, Alex. And whoever else was on that particular song with Van Halen. Great music. Welcome back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. You're going to be glad you did because Joan Pride is here. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And she's so excited about being here, she can't stand it. Right, Joan?
As always.
It's a dream come
true,
isn't it?
Every week, yeah.
It's not even like a dream come true. It actually is a dream come true, isn't it?
I guess you could put it that way, sure.
Well, I mean, I know that that's the reason why you're all, you've heard me say over the years how you're all a Twitter about the, how many years did I say that before actually came up with something called Twitter?
They must have heard you saying that.
That's the only thing I can figure out is where would they come up with a name like that? They must have been listening to my show and talking about how people are all a Twitter about the possibility of listening to my show.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm in shock.
Well, that's the story I'm sticking to, Joan. That's my story. and by the way, Joan, the sky is blue in my world, in case you were wondering.
Yeah.
Hey, Joan, climate change. Just a minute. Wait a minute, Joan. Let me step up on my box here, my soapbox. You guys come out right out of the box on page one. Climate change rules won't happen this year. Right? Won't come this year. There won't
That's
be any
right.
new climate. You guys are proposing that it won't happen this year.
This year.
So
not
why
this
is that?
Year. I'm sorry,
you know,
why is that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, because we say they're coming next year.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes it clear. The thing that I think is causing it not to happen this year is that there are just too many things on the table.
Well, that's right, yeah.
And the economy, and I predicted this. I said they wouldn't try to do it because this is not a climate change regulation and legislation, Joan, is economy hurting behavior. It's not a economy helping behavior. And so we have to try to help the economy this year. And so I think that's one of the main reasons. I think some of the people on Capitol Hill are just saying, Democrats especially, I think, are saying, this is not the year to bring this up. What do you think? You think that's what's happening?
I honestly have no idea, but it sounds like.
Well,
it
I think that's
it.
What's happening because obviously the Democrats have control of pretty much control over both houses and the White House, all three houses really, and so. But you say it's going to happen next year, and here's what I think is interesting. You report that if it doesn't happen in 2010, the EPA will take steps. Now, do you know what they're talking about doing?
What the EPA would do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, nothing. I don't know anything beyond what's on our page here.
Well,
but it sounds like if we leave it to EPA, it's going to cost businesses a lot more than if we had Congress acting.
Would you like me to tell you what the EPA will do?
Oh, please.
The EPA will declare carbon dioxide to be a dangerous gas. They will rule that, and there's some, they recently, in the last year or so, they got some kind of I've forgotten exactly which case it was. They got some kind of a Supreme Court nod that would allow them to make the case for carbon dioxide, one half of the photosynthesis process, to become a dangerous gas. And if they if they can successfully declare it a dangerous gas, then the EPA can regulate carbon.
Right. Right.
And so that's the reason why, folks, you've got the different ways of looking at this, Joan. They can either tax carbon determine carbon is a commodity, state that the government owns all of those commodities, and then tax it, and then ration it through cap and trade, or they can regulate it, which is the EPA angle.
Now, if EPA were to take that action that you're describing, would it go unchallenged, or would there be a way to challenge it in the courts? Or
I'm sure there would be challenges, but Joan, see, when Carol Browner was the EPA secretary under Clinton, she tried to get carbon dioxide established as a dangerous gas back in like 99, and she was unsuccessful.
Okay.
But since she's been out of office, within the last year or so, I've forgotten. I wish I could remember the case, but there is a case that went to the Supreme Court, and there was it gave the EPA some kind of indication that if it were brought to court, that the Supreme Court ruling that happened would give them some kind of a legal leg to stand on to regulate carbon dioxide. Not carbon, but carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
See, carbon dioxide is a gas. Carbon is the element in the gas.
Right.
And carbon is what would be rationed and commoditized. Carbon dioxide would be ruled as dangerous. And so they're the same thing, but they'd be handled differently. And I don't know how it's going to happen, but you guys point out that one way or other it is going to happen. So small business owners, brace yourself for the future, because the energy that you use right now, the air that you breathe out of your mouth, out of your lungs, your automobile, your car, I mean your houses, your heating and air conditioning units in your offices, your factory machines, all those things, to the degree that they emit carbon, somebody's going to be regulating that, Joan.
Right.
So what it looks like. And so basically what it amounts to is that it's going to cost more money to have energy, to be able to enjoy and use energy in the future.
Right.
And the problem I've got with this, Joan, is that it punishes consumption when what we should be doing is encouraging innovation for alternatives. And it tries to cram down a quick resolution to this rather than taking more time to change our behavior. And I'm concerned that it's going to hurt the economy, and so I'm glad you guys are reporting on it this week, because I think it needs to be brought up. 20 after, I'm Jim Blassingame. Joan Pride is our guest. We'll be right back. We got a lot more stuff to come after these messages.
For me to fade.
We're back. It's 23 after. That's the Drifters bringing us back from the Wayback Machine. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance, and use it to your advantage. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Check out my blog. We update that on a regular basis, and of course my knowledge base is there. Thousands of articles, thousands of archives, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Brain Trust members, the largest community of small business experts in the world, gathered together on our site and on our show. And so I hope you'll check it out. We got some new stuff coming too, so I think you're going to like some of the new stuff we got coming out. Look for that soon. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, the last thing I want to say about this greenhouse gas thing and the climate change thing, the biggest concern that I like to try to point out whenever I can is that the baseline that the climate change zealots, as I call them, with great enjoyment, the climate change zealots are trying to get us to go back to pre-1990 levels of carbon. Our economy was at $6 trillion in 1990. Our economy is now at $13 trillion, and even though it's not growing at the moment, it's going to be again real soon. So you can see, I mean, it doesn't take a mathematician to see that they're trying to get us in a very short period of time to use less than 50% of the carbon that, you know, that we need to keep the operation of our economy going right now. And so if you say, okay, we'll just, you know, if you commoditize carbon and they say, okay, you can use all that electricity, all that other power that you've been using, you're just going to have to buy it from us in the form of this commodity. So that's just goes right on the right in the expense line, and that cuts off your bottom line. So, I mean, that's a real simple way of understanding how cap and trade will hurt the economy. And Joan, I don't understand how you can look at it any other way. You got any thoughts on that?
Boy, you know, I'm not an expert on this. I've just what's interesting to me is that the business community, I guess, is kind of divided on this, because I'm looking at the coalition that we're talking about here includes some major businesses and the Chamber of Commerce, but the chamber is taking flack from members who are angry that the chamber is opposing a climate change bill. So mm-hmm. the chamber is opposing it, but there are businesses that want to, I guess, try to strike a compromise. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
The businesses that are going to be in favor of this are the ones who think they can get an angle on the commodity play and make money off of you know, being an intermediary between the government and the consumer of this carbon. I mean, you look for that. Follow that money. Whenever you see a big business in favor of cap and trade, follow that track of is this a company that will wind up benefiting from the commoditizing of carbon? So look for that. But anyway, you know, I mean, think about it, Joan. You and your family uses more electricity than you did in 1990, more power than you did in 1990. You have a bigger house. You have more cars, probably.
More stuff,
exactly. So if they came back and said, okay, you used, you know, 100 kilowatt hours, let's just say, that's not a good number, but let's just say 100 kilowatt hours in 1990, now you use 200 kilowatt hours. So now, if you want to use that extra 100 kilowatt hours, you have to pay for that carbon that you're going to expend, and that's going to cost you $1,000 a year or $5,000 a year, whatever it's going to be. And so it's just your costs are going to go up,
right,
without any kind of, you know. So these are just, I'm trying to net this out, folks, as simple as possible. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economic forecasts. GDP, the arrow is still down 2.7 for 2009. That, you know, if it winds up being 2.7 for the whole year, that, of course, obviously that means the last quarter or two will have to be positive, right?
I would think so, yeah.
Well, the first quarter was pretty bad.
Pretty far, yeah.
What was it, 6-point-something% negative the first quarter?
I think so. And I guess economists have been saying they are hoping for an upturn toward the end of 2009. So I guess we're hoping that fourth quarter is going to look pretty good.
Right. Interest rates are you guys are saying are up. This is a new figure. You think prime is going to go... it's 3.25 prime rate, which is 3% above so that's really not new though, right? I mean the current federal funds rate is a quarter of a percent, right?
Right.
So prime will be 3.25. That's not new. Inflation kind of hanging in there, not doing really much of anything for the rest of the year.
We say steady for a couple of months, so we're not going one way or the other really.
Look for inflation over the next 24 months to edge up. And, Joan, I don't know how over the next 3 to 5 years we won't have potentially runaway inflation here in the United States.
You mean because of all the economic stimulus?
Yes.
Yeah.
How could it be anything else, Joan?
I mean,
if you pour 2 gallons of water into a gallon container, a gallon of it's going to run out. I mean, that's just the law of the laws of capacity, right? You know, you just can't put 2 gallons of water into a gallon of a container. I mean, you're going to lose it, and that's what's going to happen with inflation. We're going to talk about some more of these economic forecasts, and move over and talk about some of the financial services industry, a little bit about the job situation, and some human resources stuff right after these messages. 29 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Joan Pryde is our guest. Stay with us.
USA. And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure to continue to be with you. Mr. Humble, Mr. Gracious, at your service, as Joan Pride always seems to call me that. Right, Joan?
Always.
Mr. Humble, Mr. Gracious. Joan Pride is our guest, folks. She's with the Kiplinger Editors. We're talking about the economic forecast that they post in their Kiplinger letter this week. Joan, unemployment, you guys say, is going to peak out by the beginning of next year at around 10%. That's a scary watermark number, isn't it?
Boy, I'll say.
I was hoping we wouldn't get to 10, but I don't see how we're going to keep from it. Do you?
No, I don't either.
And Joan, if you remember when you and I were reporting on the recession of 2000, after the attack of 2001, after some of the other issues that we had, the corporate malfeasance issues that we had, you know, it took. And the dot bomb collapse of the 90s, it took a couple of years. Remember the 2 years literally that we went through? We didn't have high unemployment, but we had a lot of people who were sort of unemployable. You know, we were redirecting people into new jobs.
Right.
And I'm afraid that's going to happen now. And as I look at this, Joan, and I hate to be negative about it, but as I look at this thing, I don't see unemployment getting back down to even below 6%. Maybe until like 2012.
Wow.
I'm not optimistic about the unemployment, you know, really coming back way back down fast. I think the economy is going to turn around a lot faster, but as we always know that unemployment is a lagging indicator.
Right.
But still, Joan, I'm concerned that having gotten this high.
Yeah.
This fast, that it could take a while to because I think businesses are going to be a lot more cautious about hiring people back, especially big companies.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right.
And I fear, Joan, that the big companies are going to, this will give them opportunities to find ways to do those jobs somewhere else.
As in other,
yes.
You mean offshore?
Offshore. Yes, yeah. I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. And it concerns me. And I'll tell you what else is going to happen and is happening. Small businesses are finding ways to do more of their work electronically with technology.
Ah, okay.
So the combination of the economics and the technology and the global opportunities, I think, is going to make unemployment come back slowly. And I wish it weren't
wow.
so, folks.
Yeah.
I just have to call it like I see it. And it's it'll be interesting to see. Crude oil. Now, Joan, you guys say crude oil is going to be going up, but I heard a report recently that very quickly we're going to have about a 2 million plus drop in consumption a day coming up. So I wonder what that's going to do to the price of oil.
Well, I know OPEC is just desperately trying to keep it up. And in my area, gas prices, which had dipped below $2, are now up around $2.30, $2.40. And it's kind of funny. I'm upset about it. I have to keep reminding myself that, you know, we hovered around $4, you know, a couple of years ago. So I shouldn't be.
Right.
I was dreaming of the day it could be $2.30 or $2.40
right.
again, and now I'm
right.
upset about it.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's I don't like the trend here. The number isn't horrible, but we don't like the trend, right? That's the
no,
thing that's
but,
happening.
You know, I think I can remember. You can remember just a few years ago when gas was hovering around $1 a gallon.
I'm not that old, Joan. I don't remember.
I'm sure the oil companies never want to see it get back down that low again.
Well, this is a case where, thank God for Russia and who is it, Mexico? Which is the other
renegade?
Well,
you never thought you'd be saying thank God for
Russia. I know
Russia.
It, yeah, because they're the ones, folks who are violating the production numbers that's preventing OPEC from getting a stranglehold on the price of oil.
Right.
These are the Mustangs out there, so thank God for their need for cash.
Yes.
That's holding that down, and that's the way the marketplace is supposed to work. Joan, housing sales up a little bit.
Yeah.
You're saying in the second half, right?
That's right. That's right.
That's good.
And you're seeing little glimmers of hope right now in the housing industry.
Well, a lot of these housing sales, now this is not, this doesn't mean housing construction. It just means maybe some of the current inventory is being absorbed.
Right.
Right? So that's interesting. Retail growth, still the consumer still isn't coming back to the party, are they?
Absolutely. That's the problem. I think they thought retail was coming back, but I just read a report, I think in this morning's paper, that the most recent numbers show that consumers are still holding back on spending. So it'll be interesting to see how they do later in the year as we go into the Christmas season.
I think that's one of the reasons why the economy is going to, as it builds back, is going to be slower, because you're still going to have the higher unemployment. You're going to have less credit available to consumers. Their attitude about spending is going to be less. I think that little trifecta there is going to hold down the consumer, and the consumer is 70% of the economy, folks. So if you think about that, that means the recovery is going to be a little slow. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Little Steely Dan bringing us back. Thank you very much for hanging out with us. Kiplinger, folks, is the company that Joan works for. Joan Pride, senior editor there. And Kiplinger is a great American success story. American small business, not a tiny business, but still a small business. Home-owned, homegrown, as they say, in the heartland, and still family-owned, third generation. How about that? Isn't that great? The Kiplinger letter is their weekly flagship letter that's been around since 1923, and that's the one Joan and I work off of. And then, of course, they've got the four biweeklies: the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter. And then they've got this magazine thing, too, that you can get in the newsstands, you can subscribe to. What's the name of that thing, Joan?
Well, I think it's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
We're having fun with you, folks. We know what the name is. And then the phone number,
we
Joan.
We better.
The phone.
Oh, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Kiplinger.com. Check out the website. Subscribe to their stuff. And you got a 30-day free trial. If you decide you don't like it, they'll give you your money back. Joan, financial services, the banks just went, 19 banks just went through a what they call the stress test.
Right.
And what happened?
Well, they're doing pretty well, apparently.
Half of them are.
Half. Well, that's true. What we're saying about this is that the stress test, now you can argue whether it was stressful enough, and people will say it was not, but just the fact that you could say good things about some of these banks has boosted confidence generally.
I think just the fact that they took the test, that they tested them,
really?
And that there's some kind of appearing, you know, some kind of sunlight shined on the guys, some kind of a baseline, some kind of evaluation of these guys. I think that's what did it more than anything, more than the score. Because,
really?
See, well, Joan, you and I, as adults, can deal with information, even if it's not good information, not fun information. We can deal with information as long as we have it. It's right. What we don't know that frightens us.
Well, that's true.
So the stress test was a way of knowing that, okay, we got 10 good banks, we got 9 that aren't doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think that definitely is going to help. And folks, if you're wondering how they did this, I'm not going to give you the exact example, but imagine that you... Your bank said, okay, I want you to show me what your year's going to look like if things go as they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Show me what things are going to look like if you boosted sales by 10%. Don't forget to add the incremental expenses, 10%. And then show me what would happen to your business and your cash flow if sales dropped 10%. Adjust expenses accordingly, and you could build that on a financial model, on a spreadsheet, and you could literally do that. I could show you how to do it in 6 minutes, and so. But take that, put that on steroids, and imagine if the unemployment went up or down. Imagine if whatever happened. So those are the kinds of assumptions and parameters that they put on the stress test, and some banks failed, and some banks didn't.
Right.
So that's what happened, and I think that's a good thing. But the banks aren't out of the woods yet, are they, Joan?
Well, that's important to point out. That's what we're saying here. They still need new ways to earn income, and they need a plan to get them beyond the federal bailout.
See, Joan, they're stuck, though. They're locked up. They're so afraid to. They're not even making loans. The big banks are really not making loans right now. At least not the ones that I've been I'm familiar with. I mean, they're not loaning to small businesses.
Right.
They're not loaning to companies. They're literally trying to survive and not do anything to mess up, to make things worse than they are. But consequently, they are not they're not at the party. They're not dancing with anybody.
Yeah.
And this is not good, folks. This is a bad thing, and I'm really concerned about it. And it'll be interesting to see. And I say interesting in the Chinese curse way. It'll be interesting to see what the government does about all this. You know, they found out Citi needs a lot more money. They found out Bank of America needs a lot more money. And so I don't know. I'm confused about what's going to happen. But Joan, let's move down and talk about the bond ratings quickly. One of the reasons that credit remains tight, you guys report that, is the lack of confidence in bond ratings. Joan, after all the bond ratings that showed these companies that are now out of business, basically, or are basically out of business, it showed them to be good risks. I can't imagine. I'm shocked that anybody would not have confidence in the bonds, in the bond rating organizations.
You must have been shocked that there was gambling at Rick's.
Gambling at the back door, back room of Rick's Cafe. At Rick's Cafe. I'm shocked.
Winnings in the other hand, right?
Exactly. Oh, I speak sarcasm as a second language, Joan, you know, it's really something that Joan, listen, that's an example of an institution, American institution. Our credit rating institutions have been one of the foundations, one of the pillars of capitalism in America.
Oh, mom, apple pie, and the credit rating institutions.
And we now have lost. And I've been saying this for a long time, Joan. What we've lost in the last 12 months to 15 months, we've lost the at least the illusion that these institutions were looking out for us.
That's right.
And you know, Joan, there's so much about what you and I do with each other, the trust that we have with our relationship, our friendship, the trust that we have with so much of that's been lost. And I don't know what's going to take to get that back. But I will tell you this.
It's going to take a lot.
I will tell you this. You can't legislate it.
That's true.
You can't regulate that.
Right.
And that's what's happening. That's what I'm worried about, folks.
That's right.
You can't regulate morality. You can't regulate trust. You can't legislate it, any of those things. And that's the only tools that government has. And we're not going to be able to get this feeling back that you and I have for each other, for our institutions. We're going to have to do it ourselves, not the government. Tim Till, stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. We're talking about the current events of the day and as they affect you and me and our small businesses. Joan, you guys report the odds of a compromise on a union card check bill are growing rapidly, and this is not good news. Talk to us about it.
What we say is that because Senator Spector switched parties, that that provides new impetus. I mean, we're not saying it's bad news, but we're just saying that it's more likely that this is going to happen now. He's not willing to support the bill as it currently is written, but he is open to compromise. So I think they're going to go back to the drawing board and try to come up with a different bill.
You know,
this thing was dead. This thing was pretty dead until this happened, wasn't it?
Joan. I'm telling you, this is just maddening to me. I mean,
you're having a rough morning, you know.
Look
between
what
climate
we've got,
change and the card check bill. You're
look what
a rough
we've
morning.
Got with look what we've got with the unions and their complicity in the failure. Not I didn't say they were they cost it alone, but their complicity. They are fully complicit in the failure of the United States automobile, the Big Three. They're completely. And so now we're trying to get more of those. We're trying to get the union's influence more in the American economy. I've got to ask this question. What's wrong with that picture? I mean, this is the most insane thing. The union card check bill, which is, and it's not the Employee Free Choice Act, folks. And that's what they're calling it, but it's not free choice at all. This is the most ridiculous, insane thing that I've ever heard of in my life. It's even more insane, if you can believe this, Joan. It's more insane to me than cap and trade. But both will do a lot of damage. But it's insane because the, how disingenuous it is, how dishonest it is, and the road that it will put. This is going to get unions more able to organize small business employees. This is what this is going to do, and that will be the end of American entrepreneurship. Putting unions closer to small businesses will be the beginning of the end of the American entrepreneurship. You can write that down. I said it.
I will. May 14th,
yeah.
2009.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
I got it.
Write it down. I stand by that.
Okay.
Joan, let's move over and I hope they're wrong and we small business owners, we got to fight this. I'm telling you, this is a clear and present danger. The cap and trade bill and this union bill, there are clear and present dangers to you and me and our small businesses. Joe, let's move over and talk about that's Jim Blassingame's opinion, by the way, folks. Let's move over and talk about human resources. You got an interesting story here about banning guns in the workplace.
That's right.
Now, tell us about it. Are you saying that more companies are banning guns in the workplace? I guess maybe I thought all companies wouldn't want you to bring guns to a workplace.
Well, you would think that, but I guess the point we're making here is even if you want to ban guns in the workplace, you might not be able to because a lot of states prohibit employers from banning guns.
Mm-hmm.
So that, in other words, that they are opting to protect the worker's right to bear arms.
Well, you know, Joan, there's an interesting angle to this thing, in my opinion, because if you ban guns for the good guys, the bad guy, the guy who wants to come in and shoot everybody up, he's not going to, or she's not going to abide by that, obviously, and they're going to be able to get a gun wherever they want to. So I actually think that it wouldn't be a bad thing for a potential gunman to know that Billy Joe Bob is going to be sitting over there armed to the teeth in his desk. and if you walk in, you know, and start brandishing your weapon, he's just going to pop you. I think I'd like knowing that. You know, you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, how many of the shooters that we've seen across the country who've killed all these people, how many of them have been shot by a person who wasn't a police officer?
Yeah. The only problem is I think the truly crazy ones won't think to take that into account.
Well, they might not, but maybe somebody would stop them. I mean, if I was in a place and I were armed and a guy started shooting at somebody and I could tell he was obviously, you know, creating harm to people, I would shoot him right between the eyes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't think about it. Wouldn't even think about it. I would do it quickly. And I'd move in his direction to do that, just to stop it.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people would.
I'd miss.
Well, but you know what? You might make him run away.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Joan, the economic downturn is causing some emotional health, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of fear in the marketplace.
Yes. That's very true. You know, you fear for your job. You know, you might lose your job, or even if you don't, you worry that you might. And then you've got foreclosures, so it's leading to depression and anxiety among
employees. So, folks, you might want to talk to your people. I've been talking about this for a while. Talk to your people about how things are going and how you're planning on dealing with things. It's a good idea. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today. I'll see you tomorrow in Washington, D.C.
That's right.
Looking forward to that. Don't leave town. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll see you during Small Business Week.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.